This week's parsha, Ela Toldos Yaakov, so the challenge that confronts the Mefarshim is where are the Toldos of Yaakov? Because the next thing is Yosef ben Shas Veshana. So Rashi, if you read him very carefully, says that these are the stories of the Toldos of Yaakov. A pshat that probably his grandson Rashbam could have accepted. Rashbam, after his long methodological comments, observes that the Rishonim explained Ela Toldos Yaakov, this is the history, the stories of Yaakov and his descendants, and he says it's Heva. He's not talking about Rashi. And he says that the Toldos always refer to genealogies, typically the children, and then the grandchildren. And he draws a parallel from Noach, where at the beginning of Parshas Noach you have Ela Toldos Noach Shem Kol Yofes, and later in the parsha you have all the descendants, and then by Esav in last week's parsha you have first a section in the last parsha, they are next to one another, first the Toldos of Esav, his children, and then you get it again, the Ela Toldos, which are his grandchildren, and his children. So the Rashbam says the same thing happens here. First, you have in last week's parsha, right after the Maisa Ruvain, you have Yuvin Yaakov Shem Asar, the listing of his children. And then, in these parshios, Yehuda, in this week's parsha, with Er, Onan, Sheva, Peretz, and Zerah, and then Yosef, in parsha's case, Menashe and Ephraim, the grandchildren, and then the full Shiva Nefesh in Vayigash. That's what the Ela Toldos Yaakov refers to. What's interesting, which is not really about Rashbam per se, is that the Torah here has a certain kind of foreshadowing, as it does in Parshat Enemy, Ketzav Vayigash, the struggle between Yehuda and Yosef, which foreshadows the eventual split of the kingdom, and already you have, before you get to the struggle with Yehuda and Yosef themselves, you have just their children laid out in these two parshas before you get to the ultimate struggle, foreshadowing what's going to happen in Vayigash. Now, these two children of Yaakov ultimately are the ones who struggle for supremacy. But Yaakov, when he makes a choice, ironically, where it really counts, chooses Yehuda. When Yaakov finally finds out that Yosef was alive, and his family is moving down to Egypt, Yaakov knows that they need a yeshiva in Goshen. They need a yeshiva. You go with the Golos, it's true in Eretz Yisrael also, but it's Kabchomer Golos. You need a Makom Torah to perpetuate Torah and Torah values. And especially in Golos, when you're exposed to so much around you. But Yaakov chooses Yehuda. That's Yehuda Shalach Yaakov Lefanav Lehoros Lefanav Goshen. He said Yehuda. Why did he just ask Yosef to build the yeshiva? Yosef was the viceroy. Yosef had all the resources. He chose Yehuda. And I would suggest that Yaakov chose Yehuda because he feared, perhaps without merit, that Yosef was maybe a little bit tainted by his acculturation in Egypt. He had been Paro's viceroy for 9 years. He had been there 13 years before that in the house of Potiphar, which was a makom of Zima, just like the house of Potiphar. And so he wasn't sure whether Yosef was the right person to establish the yeshiva. That Yosef, he felt, was he was afraid, maybe a little bit too acculturated to Egyptian society. So to be sure, he asked Yehuda to do it. Yosef was sensitive to this question. When he brings his children in Parshas Vayechi for Yaakov to bless, so the Medrash says that the Shechina was nostalgic from Yaakov because of, I think, potentially descendants of Yosef, Yeravam, whoever it was, would do bad things. So Yosef pleaded with his father, and he pulled out the ksuba, their mother. He said, "It's kosher. I did everything properly. That's what he was telling his father. No, I behaved properly." And Yaakov then blessed him. But the truth is, Yosef's answer to Yaakov there did not definitively answer the question. Because you know, a person can be technically observant. They can choose to eat at a kosher restaurant instead of a non-kosher restaurant.
But they can still think, you know, they can still be suffused with other values. But not with Torah values. They can go through the motions. It can be a lifestyle. They keep Shabbos. They keep kosher. But they're not personally suffused with Torah values. So the fact that Yosef had a shtark suba, yeah, he got them aside the kedushin. He made the fancy wedding. That in itself, maybe Yosef indeed did withstand the temptations. And I might even argue he did, because according to the Medrash, the reason why he died before his brothers was because Harashos Mekabel Esbalah. Power ends up varying things, not because Yosef was acculturated. But that wasn't sufficient proof. Hotzi Shark Suba was not necessarily enough. And even if Yosef was right ultimately, Yaakov wasn't sure, at least at the point where he hadn't seen Yosef in 22 years. And so it was Vashiva Shalach Lefanav El Yosef, Lehoros Lefanav Goshen. This particular issue, this dichotomy between superficial observance and being imbued with deeper Torah values, has been the Achilles heel for Jews in every culture, in every millennium, in every century. If you study Jewish history, if you read Tanakh, start with Tanakh. If you know how to read Gemara with a historical lens, just the things Chazal tell us. If you know how to read the literature from Eretz Yisrael, the evidence of this abounds. It has always been the challenge of Jews avoiding the absorption of values of cultures around them. Even when we lived in Eretz Yisrael, in Bayis Rishon or Bayis Sheni, we never lived in isolation. That is the profound challenge of every Torah true Jew. And in many ways, it's also the Achilles heel of a significant part of modern Orthodoxy in the United States, and to a lesser degree, not often acknowledged, even by large parts of those Achinu B'nai Yisrael who would be to the proverbial right of us. Maybe to a lesser degree, but in many areas, the same disease exists. The challenge, of course, to talking about this issue is determining what are Torah values. You can go around being mefatpet, blabbering, always talking about Torah values, Torah true values, and it's really important to talk about it, but determining what they are is not always a black and white issue. Not always. Sometimes it's close, but not always. And I would point out to you that in addition to that, there's a profound challenge of people's inconsistency, of talking about Torah values in one area and not in other areas. And often we find that people in different parts of the community will distort things in issues related to economics, to egalitarianism, to economics, to LGBTQ, to economics, to environmentalism, to economics. The Torah has a perspective on all of these issues. It has a perspective on all of them, and a Torah true Jew seeks to model him or herself on those values, not just whether they go to a kosher restaurant. Determining in all of these areas and every other area, determining Torah values, as I said, is fraught. Just one observation. Eishah Sifas Torah. The story of Eishah Sifas Torah is that you take a woman, you capture a woman in war, so you can't rape her on the battlefield. Shalo yilchatzena b'ruchama, Chazal said. Chazal tell us that when it comes to Eishah Sifas Torah, taking her into your house and following the Torah's prescription is a bidiyat. It's immoral, it's wrong, but the Torah allows it because divrei Torah keneged yetzer hara. Now, if Chazal hadn't told us this, we might have looked at Eishah Sifas Torah and said, that's a Torah value. That's the way you're supposed to treat women captives. But Chazal tell us, no, that's wrong, but divrei Torah keneged yetzer hara. The Torah didn't flat out forbade anything that people would just ignore. In this case, the Ribbono Shel Olam felt it was better to regulate it than to completely ban it. Now, I don't wish to discuss what one thinks about that, you know, with that particular cheshbon. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam's cheshbon to make, not ours. But my point simply is that you look at a halacha, a significant halacha, five psukim in the Torah, and yet you could walk away with the wrong message if Chazal didn't instruct us about the correct message. So sometimes it's hard to tell whether or not a particular message is a reflection of only a particular time, or it represents an eternal Torah value. Sometimes it's challenging. So the question then is, how does one go about for oneself determining Torah's values? And I would say that there are two things that a person has to do, but the first is not so simple for most of us. The first is that one has to immerse oneself in the study of Torah. Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebal Peh, Machshav Es Chazal, Halacha. One has to immerse oneself, because learning one mitzvah of halacha or one mitzvah of Torah does not present a person with a full picture. You learn daf beis, but you didn't learn daf gimel. And maybe if you only learn daf beis, you walk away with one message. But when you see daf beis and daf gimel together, you see a different picture. But that's also often not realistic for every person. And therefore, the klal that applies is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Asei L'Charav. You have to find someone who can model, both in teaching and in behavior, Torah values. Now, of course, that in itself is a challenge as well. So I would tell you that there are three things, at least, there might be more, that a person who is going to be a purveyor of Torah values, three qualifications that must be met. The first is the person must be suffused with Torah knowledge. That would seem to be obvious, but it's not to some people. So if you learned a year or two in yeshiva, and you think that that person, he learned 2 years in yeshiva, he's the Gadol Hador, he can be Rebbe, that's a mistake. No person is going to achieve the level of mastery to understand, to be an appropriate role model, ultimately, for Torah values, unless they are suffused with Torah knowledge. The second is they have to be a person who presents Torah honestly in all contexts. Not only when it's comfortable, and not only this part of Torah, but not that part of Torah. That in itself is a siman. The person is not roy to communicate. So if the person distorts in any area of Torah, certainly in multiple areas of Torah, you know this is not a person to listen to. This is a person who you shouldn't trust as speaking for Torah values. And the third criteria is kisitzin choen yishmur das v'sori v'akshiri piu. As Chazal tell us in Doma Rav L'Malach Hashem Tzarkos, Memod Himenu, V'Yimla Perosh Himenu. The person has to be a role model in Midos. The person can know Halacha, know more Shas than anybody else. But if the person in public is, or we know in public, is a Menuvol, has no Midos, you don't learn Torah from that person. That's not that person. Even if that person were a great Talmud Chacham, by the standards of Torah knowledge, that's not a person that you turn to knowledge for. If one wanted to perhaps speak about the decline of modern orthodoxy, and I should state this very clearly, there are lots and lots and lots of wonderful, serious modern Orthodox Jews, no mistake about it. But I don't know that they currently represent, or ever did, a majority of the community. And I will not speak to any other Orthodox or other community. It's not my business. It's not my community, and I don't know enough about it to speak. I can only speak to our own. If you want the strongest indictments, just ask yourself the question, to whom do our young people, our teenagers, pay more attention to? Well, I'll tell you who they pay attention to. Sports stars, social media personalities, that's who they model themselves upon. That's who they look to. People who entertain them, not people who can educate them. They don't look to Rabbanim. They don't look to Torah figures. They don't often look to their parents or grandparents. They look to for entertainment. That's where they spend their time. That's who they look to. That's who they want to be like. Not every rabbi, not everybody with the title, is a Talmud Chacham or Roy to be a model. But I'm pretty sure that you'd be very hard-pressed to find any professional athlete or social media personality who would meet the criteria. You have heard me say many times talk about this issue of Torah values. It is a tremendous, tremendous chizaron that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed more.
we strive not just to see the trees, but to see the forest. Torah is supposed to suffuse everything we do, not just kashrus, not just Shmir Shabbos, not just being socially orthodox, but it is supposed to suffuse everything in the deepest recesses of our personality. Our question that we are supposed to live by is Ma Hashem Elokecha Shalel Meinach. That's the question that we're supposed to live by. We may sometimes stumble. We may sometimes fail. That's okay if we're failing to answer the question properly. But it's inexcusable if we're failing to ask the question. So I don't really know whether Yaakov Avinu was ultimately correct in his assessment of Yehuda versus Yosef. But from the vantage point where he sat, it certainly made sense why he chose Yehuda over Yosef for this particular task. And maybe was Yosef a tzaddik? Maybe Yosef was right in the end that he hadn't lost a step. And if so, maybe it could have been the yeshiva of Yehuda and Yosef. But Yaakov Avinu's lesson to us in this is very clear. That when we live in any kind of foreign culture, which is everywhere in the world, it doesn't matter whether you live in the United States or you live in Israel, you are surrounded by a foreign culture. The place that is needed in every situation is the yeshiva. I don't mean the four walls of this yeshiva, but a place and a focus on that which the yeshiva stands for, which is not only Limud HaTorah and not only Kiyum HaTorah, but a value, a system of values of Torah that should permeate who we are and everything that we do. Good Shabbos.